Hello, everyone. Hi, Melved. How are you?
Hello. I am doing well. I'm excited about the new year coming soon.
I know. We are so close. And so first, we want to kick it off by saying hello. We want to say thank you to Carlos Maldonado, who is hosting us and producing this podcast. My name is Zulema Gomez, and I am with the National Parent Leadership Institute. I'm a parent leader, and I'm also a leader within this organization. Melvette.
Yes. Hello, everyone. I'm Melvette Hill. I, too, am a parent leader. I live in Danbury, Connecticut. Right now, it's a warm day for winter. We're excited about it. But also, I lead the Commission on Women, Children, Seniors, Equity, and Opportunity, which is a commission of our state legislature. And I have the honor and privilege to work with the wonderful people at NPLI on policy and capacity building things. So glad to be here with you, Zulema, my good friend and colleague.
Yeah, it's good to be together. If you've been listening to the podcast, you might have noticed there's been a good gap between the podcasts. There's some good movement and change and transition happening. But we are so ready to engage in this conversation. You know, Melvette and I are good friends, but even we haven't had some of the conversations that we're about to engage in. So this is kind of our time to also like catch up and see what's going on. So I'm excited. It'll be good. And thank you for all who listen and support us. So this is post-election. And, you know, we've been hearing a lot from parent leaders and other organization leaders around some concerns and some opportunities as we enter sort of these next 4 years under a new president, right? And I don't know, Melvette, what has been on your mind as a leader in the state of Connecticut, as a parent leader? What does this post-election landscape look like for you?
I have to say, I've settled in and understand that for many people and for myself, things didn't go the way that we had anticipated they might go. Based on polling, all the things that we were hearing from people, from polls, from political analysts, and here we are getting ready to have a new president, a new administration. That seems like it might be a little different than his previous administration when he took office in 2017. But I think that on both sides of both sides of the aisle, there are people who are very hopeful. And there are people who are excited about something different than what they had already been experiencing. And I think that's why we've arrived at where we are now, because people were looking for something different. And when I can think about having more money in my pocket, if I'm a family who's struggling, and if someone is telling me I can have more money in my pocket, I might be more inclined to listen to what they have to say. And things like inflation and the economy and the GDP is doing great might not resonate with folks, right? So I think what we've learned here, and I think a lesson for us all, is, you know, having conversations with everyday people and understanding their needs and what concerns them. This is what we know in local and state government when we talk to constituents. What are the things that are affecting you directly? What are the things as a parent, as a grandfather, as an individual, as a college student, as a, you know, wherever you are, what are the things that are affecting you right now? What's keeping you up at night? And I think when we start asking those questions and move back away from different political ideologies or party politics and really listen to what people are saying to us, I think we can move forward with purpose and really trying to serve the people that we're here to serve. So I think that's where I am right now here in the state of Connecticut as we get ready for our legislative session next month, just a few weeks away. We're looking at, what are the people saying? What do people really need? Not what do we think people need, but what do people really need and what are they telling us? So I think it's really in the listening. What do you think? What's happening? What are you hearing?
Yeah, I think... So similar to many parent leaders, there were the roller coaster of emotion, right? I think I had meetings directly, you know, just a day or so after election day. And the mood was somber. It was nervous. There was a lot of anxiety. There was a big call for good self-care and mental care. And if that means talking to, you know, your therapist or seeking out a therapist, that was important to do. And I think that's always important to do. But, you know, I think as the conversations are settling in, we're still hearing a lot of concern, specifically for our immigrant communities. We're hearing a lot of concern for really the most marginalized, right, in our communities. And wonderings around what this work of parent leadership, of strengthening our democracy, what that's going to look like in the next 4 years. When right. we can't possibly in some states use language around inclusion, when we can't talk about diversifying voices and democracy in some states. So there is a lot of concern. And I think as a parent leader, I definitely was in that place for a solid good few weeks. And then I had the opportunity to be in a space with activists and leaders from across the country. And I left with this sense of opportunity, right? So how do I turn my anger, if we're going to be honest, and how do I use this to propel change in my community and in other communities? And I really settled into like, what are the policy issues I want to focus on? And for me, it's really thinking about my immigrant neighbors and parent leaders and my family also, and dedicating more time in that policy space than I have in the past. And so I think there's opportunity for all of us as parent leaders to really look at, like, where do I want to spend my time? Where can I be most useful? Right. Rather than to sit in fear and not to ignore that, right? I think there's absolutely valid reasons to have fear for the future. You know, we have experienced this presidency before, and it was not without violence, and it was not mm-hmm. without, you know, many, many stories across the country that were really hard to listen to because of those experiences. And I don't think any of us are being ignorant of that. But for me, this is a place of opportunity. Like, how do I use my time differently moving forward so that yeah. I'm not just sitting in those feelings, right? Like, how can I be productive? Because right. That's just who I am. That's what I try to do. And that's the conversation I've had with my own son, right, who had questions right. immediately the day after. And I think many people have sort of like joked out loud, like, if this were to happen, we will just flee to Canada or we'll flee to here. And our kids hear that conversation. And I realize that now because that was my son's first question mm-hmm. was like, when are we moving to Canada? It's like, oh, yeah. That's not going to happen because we got to stay and help our communities, right? But I think that's very real. And our kids hear those conversations, right? And we had to talk about, like, what we're going to do is we're going to settle in and help. We're going to do the work. And that's what it's looking like. And not just for me, but I think as we're hearing parent leaders now, a month or so later, that's what we're hearing is people really organizing and figuring out like where their efforts will really be in the next few years.
I think as we look at these United States and democracy here and civic health, right, we have to also look outside, right, and see that this is this unrest and this sense of not being fulfilled, not having needs met. It's not just here in the United States, right? It's in other countries that we're seeing these things happen, right? We look at Germany, right? They just unseated their leader. Canada, Justin Trudeau and the finance minister. People are really holding leaders accountable, right? We look at Syria and they've unseated, you know, overthrown the government. And so each day we're hearing about these rumblings across the globe, where people are just had enough and they want their voices heard. And so I think we have work to do. I'm always mindful, right? So I'm like a 70s kid. I was a teenager in the 80s. And, you know, that's like the time where Jesse Jackson ran for president, I believe. But it was keep hope alive, right? That's the thing that continues to resonate with me, that people need a sense of hope that something can be better. And I feel challenged because a lot of people don't feel that it's getting better. And we're beginning to see this play out more and more every day. As you said, with violence, right? And so this person who just assassinated a CEO of a healthcare organization, right? Like, people are getting denied claims. People can't afford their medicine. And yes, there have been some changes with certain prescriptions, right? Like, people who are diabetic and need insulin, there have been changes there to minimize costs across some medications. But that's not a one-size-fits-all answer. It's not a policy answer for all people. And so whether you're an elementary school student who is being bullied, or whether you're a middle schooler who chooses on any given day to pull out a gun and shoot a teacher, right? Like, these are the things that are happening. These are the remnants of what we're seeing after an election. This is the temperature check in our country that we all should be mindful of. Like, these things aren't happening in silos, but they're all feeding into a narrative around our country. That's where I think we are right now. But I think that people can put words to action, good intentions to action, and be hopeful, right? That they can be those change agents, even when we do the things that we feel we've done the right thing and we followed all the processes and we, you know, we learned how things work. And sometimes things don't work out the way we want. It doesn't mean that we stop doing the right thing and we keep fighting for what's right. Yeah.
I recently heard or read a quote by Maryam Kaba, and it's in a scarf that I purchased that says, hope is a discipline. Right. And I think what that means to me when I saw it, I think I still have to do some more reading around it. But when I saw it, it was a reminder that hope requires us to do a little bit more, right? It's a constant practice of doing the work, finding those like hopeful bright spots, but of being a part of what gives our communities hope, right? So it's not just sitting there and hoping that something will just show up and things will just work out. But I think hope is a discipline, to me, means that there's work involved, right, in that, on all sides. And I think that's what if I want hope for these 4 years, if I want to bring that to my communities, it means I can't be a bystander or passive resident in my community, right? I have to do more. And I think that's what's going to be required of us, for sure, especially in these hard times. So you and I were both traveling post-election. We attended different conferences. I was at Race Forward in St. Louis. You were at a civics conference in D.C. And so I've been really curious, because we haven't talked about your experience, what came up at that conference as we're exploring these topics of civics and democracy post-election. So anything to bring to our work, any hope, any caution?
You know, I'm always excited to go to D.C. because D.C. is like the center, the seat of our democracy here in this country. So I was like, yay, I was excited. And then also like wondering, curious, like how the, you know, what's going to be the culture shift, if anything, or what's going to be the temperature? And, you know, it was cold, but the temperature was the usual, right? D.C. is a political city. You have people of all types of political parties and persuasions. And then there are also like not only the politicians, but also you have the college students and the scholars, as well as the people who live there across like whatever socioeconomic background that exists, right? So D.C. was D.C. It was the usual thing. Of course, you heard conversations in restaurants and hotels, and everyone had their own opinion. But there was nothing that gave me big concern, like, oh my gosh, I've got to get out of here and go back and tell everyone. what I would say is that at the conference, so it was hosted by the National Conference on Citizenship, and it was their annual conference, and the theme of the conference was renewing civic health. And right, that was telling, because we have to also own and admit that maybe we're not healthy. Maybe, you know, the civic health of people and communities and our cities, our nation overall, is just not healthy. We kind of see some of this play out, right? Unhealthy civic behavior and engagement. I'll let people think about what that might mean to them. At the conference, I was on a panel, and the panel really addressed what are the gaps that we're seeing as we measure civic health. So historically, very old school civic health, people think volunteering, right? If you volunteer, that's like civic engagement. So volunteering alone is not a measurement, right? But also we look at voting, right? So they're talking about voting as a great measurement for civic health. But we also know that not everyone can vote, right? We have teenagers who are not voting age. We also have people who don't have the right to vote in this country at this time. It doesn't mean that they're not civically engaged. So we were looking at what are some of the gaps. So I would say that here's a little secret. So Connecticut is going to be doing its civic health index. We're hoping to start next year. We're kind of doing all the planning and having the conversations and thinking about the questions we want to ask. The civic health index that NCOC puts out has 21 indicators. We're going to be looking to add some questions, because I'm very interested in why people aren't engaged. What are the barriers to engagement? And why have we landed on maybe we're unhealthy in our civic health spaces? So when I think about health, I think about the social determinants of health. And what are the things within that sphere, right? Like, how does housing, how does, you know, my employment and all those other things affect my ability to be civically engaged? We're not collecting those kinds of answers on these surveys. So I really want to look at that and see how that is moving us to where we want to go. So it was a great conference. I came back very invigorated. My team member, I was like texting the whole time going, and we're going to do this, and we need to do this, and we're going to schedule these things, because it really opened up your mind to the things that aren't happening. So it made me think about things that could happen.
That's great. I mean, I think the conversation around sort of like civic health and democracy was something that came up at the Race Forward conference. So it's Race Forward hosts this conference every 2 years, and it's called Facing Race, and it was in St. Louis. Really with, you know, Ferguson being part of the backdrop, right? And where the city is 10 years after they had their own, you know, murder by a police officer and you know, riots and the activism that's happened since that. I think that backdrop was important. It was an important reminder that we have not come very far, and that there has been a lot of good work also, right? I think it was a good moment to celebrate that. But, you know, Joanne Reed was one of the keynote speakers, who is a journalist who's very outspoken, right? Asked the hard questions. I left very motivated to work harder, to name, you know, to be a truth teller, right? A bolder truth teller, because of some of the things that she was saying. But I think the something that I heard across these 3 days was the language of civics and democracy. And was that enough? Mm. Is that going to be enough to save our democracy? How do we talk about the opportunities of civic engagement and democracy without even using that language, in a way that everyday working people who are working 3 jobs, who are not involved in any way the way some of us are as parent leaders, who still want better for their families and their communities. And so there was, I think, a lot of conversation around language. Yeah. What is the language that we're using? Is our language accessible? Do we have to be bolder? Where do we have to change? There were a lot of concerns around DEI language, and a lot of concerns around what nonprofits can do moving forward without being labeled terrorist organizations, right? That's a concern right now. So there were some organizations that were saying, you know, we have to talk about the thing without saying those words. Right. How do we do the work of diversity, inclusion, belonging without using those words, if that's what is going to be be needed for our states to move forward. And in some cases, there was a call out for how can we still be bold in using language that is necessary for change? And I don't think there was an answer, right? It really meant you have to think about your community, the context. And I am a person that really believes that language matters, but I walked away from that conference understanding that it's not the most important thing. The most important thing is healthy communities, children have opportunities for a better future, and the work is important. Right. Whatever we call that work, at the end of the day, not the most important thing. So that was my sort of like aha, not holding on to language. Because these last few years, especially for MPLI, we've been bold with language. And I think it's something we've been proud of. I know I've been proud of that. But moving forward, we have to really reevaluate. And how do we talk about civics and civic health in a way that doesn't tune out everyday folks, where civics and democracy doesn't mean much, even though we know it impacts everything, right? So I think it was a good call in for all of us doing this work to think differently about language, to think differently about the work, definitely to continue to be bold. But if the underground is necessary to do some of this, that we are bold enough to go there also. And I think St. Louis was a good example where we saw some activists being very bold and outspoken, and then some who were the quieter leaders that were moving the work, right? Supporting the families, helping young people find opportunities in the city, working with the mayor's office. And so there's going to be all types of leaders needed for, these, not just these next 4 years, I think just it moving forward. Sure. We have to think differently about this work. And for me, democracy is important. Civic engagement is important. But I do have to think, I think all of us have to really think about, like, what does that really mean? We are tuned in to this world. But what does it mean for other folks? I think, as you were saying earlier, when we talked about post-election, it means we're having real conversations with everyday folks who are not in our bubble, right? Because at the end of the day, you know, we are in the circle with like fellow elected officials and fellow parent leaders that are tuned in. So we have to widen sort of our networks and who we're having conversations with. And that's going to mean that some of these folks don't have the same beliefs, political ideals as we do. But that's how we're going to get to change, right? We have to expand those networks that we hold right now.
Absolutely.
It was a great conference, and it'll come back in 2 years. So if you're someone that's really interested around, civics, democracy, and race specifically, race issues and inclusion and belonging in 2 years, they'll announce the date pretty soon here.
Did they announce where it might be next time around?
They did. And I think it was Florida. I have to go back. I have to. It's on their website already. But they're, we have time. So I think it's a really great professional growth opportunity for folks who can attend. I definitely want to go to the one you went to. So that's my goal for 2025, is to attend that conference.
That one is really good.
There's a lot of work there. Anything else as we're looking at 2025? I think we wanted to talk about the podcast and maybe some upcoming changes, right? So in 2025, so you've been hearing mostly Melved and I, it's just been you and I, and we've had a couple of guests. We really enjoyed, some of you would have heard Hobson McCain, who is on the National Parent Leadership Team and is a law student and is definitely very clued in to what is happening in our court systems and, different decisions that the Supreme Court's making. And another policy nerd like you and I. And so we want to bring him in more. So you'll be hearing him as a host, a co-host. Hi. Melved and I are also going to figure out a schedule where we are recording together, but might be recording separate with like Hobson and other guests. So you'll be hearing different voices. We want to bring in more parent leaders into these conversations and widen, again, like these discussions. So just wanted to alert folks to some different voices that you'll hear, and we're really excited about that. But as we get into the holidays, what are you up to, Melba? What's this season look like for you?
I'm staying close to home. I'm getting ready for the new year. A lot of purging and cleaning and, you know, just decluttering, but also celebrating. So my daughter's birthday is in December, so we'll do something nice together, and just really getting ready for January. I just want to be fresh, but we'll celebrate Christmas. We celebrate Christmas, and so we'll have family time, and then I'll probably go down to New York City a couple of days to visit with my brother. What about you?
Yeah, I think definitely some family time. So I'll be driving up. I'm in Southern California now. I'll be driving up to Northern California, which is like a whole day's drive, really. It's a huge state. But that's where I have family. So I'll be there for a bit. I love this season as a reset season, too. So I am definitely a person who like digs into the calendar and does the planning. Although I've switched to a virtual planner, which I'm really loving. And I never thought I'd do that. Sort of like that organizing. I've already begun to do some of that purge that you were talking about little by little. But for us, it's solstice. So our family celebrates solstice, which is really that kickoff to the winter season. We do some Christmas things with some members of our family, but as far as our household, we kick off the winter season with really celebrating what this holiday is and good cooking. I'm making tamales this weekend.
Oh, yay.
So I'm excited about all that. But it's just, I think whatever folks are celebrating, you know, some folks celebrate various holidays this season, whether it's like Kwanzaa and Christmas or doing Hanukkah and other types of celebrations. I think at the end of the day, it's really about like family. Hopefully folks can find some time for rest. I think that's really important. Like, we can't hibernate like the bears, but we can't do some of that in small increments as much as possible, because this is hard work, right? And it's important to like find those moments of rest, rejuvenation, so that we can recognize the joy moments as they come, recognize the celebrations, because we do have wins in this work, right? But I think you need to be ready to see that. Sometimes you're just so overwhelmed that you can't. I'm really looking forward to that. And that's really what I wish for our parent leaders and those who support this work, is find those moments of rest and family or community, in whichever way you celebrate the season.
Yeah. Good stuff.
All right. Well, I probably won't see you till after the new year.
So
that's exciting. I hope you have so much fun in New York, or the city, as you call it.
I call it the city. I mean, I was born in New York City, so it's like my place. It's like my home. All I have to say is the city, and people know it is the only city. It's the best city in all of these United States, in my heart. So.
Yeah, San Diego's pretty awesome, but, I guess New York's good, too. Well, it was so good to talk to you and see you, and we'll be talking the new year, and just a big thanks to Carlos for producing this podcast. Thank you, Carlos.
Thank you, Carlos, and good being with you, Suleyma.
Yeah.
So bye, everyone. We'll talk to you next time.
Bye-bye.